stocks, bonds, ETFs, straight out of downtown Chicago. This is Zach's Market Edge.
Welcome to Zach's Market Edge, the podcast about investing in your life. I'm your host, Tracy Reinick. And this week, I'm joined by Eric Dutrum, Zach's chief ETF strategist and the editor of the ETF Investor, which is one of Zach's weekly newsletters, to discuss all the cool things happening in the world of ETFs. There's been quite a few launches in 2017, as there always are with the ETF scene. And Eric has been telling me about some of the cool ones here in our offices. So that's why I asked him to join me today, so that we can spread the word about what is available out there. Because, Eric, there's like thousands of ETFs now. And other than like, you know, SPY or something like that, like these basic ones that I know, it's hard to keep track of all the new things that are coming out and that are launching. But some of these have like intriguing investment themes that people might be interested in.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we are over 2,000 funds for the ETF world and 141 launched just this year so far.
Wow.
So that might be the problem with keeping track of all of them. There's just so many.
Right. It's hard to even know kind of what's going on out there.
And although people keep freaking out about some sort of ETF bubble, there are plenty of cool ideas that have come out. We've seen that this year as well. So some really interesting ones, at least I think. I don't know if anyone at home is going to think the same thing, but definitely some new areas.
I thought we'd kind of reached peak ETF too. I was in that camp of like, meh, what else can they come up with? You know, we've covered like all the areas, but no, they do keep surprising me with like these new concepts that I'm like, ooh, that's kind of interesting. I could see myself buying that one.
That's right. And then there's Bitcoin stuff on the horizon and there's all sorts of other areas too.
The Bitcoin, maybe we should just cover that real quick. Like there is no ETF for the Bitcoin.
That's correct. But we have seen, I believe five different companies have filed for one. Some want to hold the actual Bitcoins in a trust. Others want to use futures and other derivatives once that market's a little more developed. But as of right now, yeah, there's nothing on the market.
But isn't there a controversy with the SEC about these possible Bitcoin ETFs? Didn't they've already tried to make one, right?
Yeah, one company got rejected. And to me, that makes a lot of sense because one of the prospectuses had said that, you know, if people break in and steal the Bitcoins, it's kind of, oh, well, good luck to all you investors.
Too bad.
So I'm guessing the SEC didn't really care for that too much. But I think the futures is a way around this whole issue. So I'm a little more hopeful that those future ones will get approved. And I bet we'll be talking about that one next time I'm on here for this.
Well, if they launch, I'm definitely having you on for it. Because I do kind of see those as a sign of, you know, a little bit of bubblicious behavior in the Bitcoin area once we start getting ETFs for that. I mean, we saw them all pile in on all the possible, you know, metal ETFs and all that over the years when the metals got hot. They're kind of done with that now. And now they're moving on to the next.
Definitely. But think how much easier it's going to be for someone like you or I to buy a Bitcoin if it's traded on this exchange traded product as
that
opposed
is true.
To now. I'm not even really 100% sure where I would go to get one.
I tried to have Dave here in the office tell me where to go on one of the podcasts and what I needed to do. And I'm still confused. So I'm clearly not in that market. I'm staying out. But when they do launch, because it sounds like you think they will, then we'll be discussing that, and that'll be a hot one. But in the meantime, let's discuss some of the other ones that have launched that aren't in Bitcoins, but they still kind of have interesting dynamics. And I wanted to lead off with one that people might not initially think, oh, that's cool, but because I was kind of in that camp. But then the more I thought about it, it is cool. So I wanted to talk about this EDOW, E-D-O-W, Equal Weight Dow ETF. Like this is more of just kind of a standard, index one, because you're like probably thinking, why do I need another, you know, Dow ETF?
Right.
But why is this different than what we already have?
So a lot of people out there might not realize that the Dow is actually weighted by the price of the stocks in the benchmark. And to me, that's always been such a crazy way to do an actual weighting scheme. So that way, basically what it means is companies like Home Depot actually end up taking a bigger percentage of the assets than an Apple just because their share price is higher. So
okay, so if they have like Home Depot, I think is like $150 a share. So therefore it's weighted more
exactly.
In there. The same with, I always wondered why, you know, I mean, IBM, when it would go down after earnings, they would always say, like, the Dow is down thanks to IBM. And it's simply because the share price was so high.
Absolutely. And that's a big reason why Apple wasn't in the Dow for a long time, was because their share price was $700 or whatever it was back in the day. And that would have just really screwed up things for the Dow and their whole weighting mechanism. So the eDow, and honestly, it's probably my favorite ETF that has come out this year, it weights all 30 Dow components equally. So every company in there gets roughly 3.33%. So Goldman Sachs, Boeing, United Health, they all get the same amount as opposed to before, where Goldman Sachs might get a couple percentage points more than a Boeing or even some of the smaller companies in the benchmark. So to me, it's a much better way to just look at the whole blue chip market in a way that actually makes some sense, as opposed to a insane, oh, let's just weight them by price because that's cool, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. It never made any sense to me. Obviously, I'm a big Dow hater, but I think the equal weight version is gets rid of a lot of these issues.
Yeah, I feel like when people are buying an ETF of the Dow, they think they're owning it kind of equally, even though they're not. But they do think like, oh, I'm buying this ETF specifically so that I can just get all 30 components and they're all the big caps and yay. But you weren't really getting that. I noticed the top 10 holdings were over 50% of that. If you buy just the Dow ETF, the regular one, you know, the way that it's weighted. So yeah, like this is a much better way. So I feel like this puts it in play for a lot more investors.
Yeah, and I think it just makes a lot more sense. And, you know, like I've been saying, it just never made any rational sense why IBM would be basically double ExxonMobil in this benchmark just because the price was higher. It's just kind of crazy.
Yeah. Okay, so the craziness has been solved. eDow is the ticker with that one. Let's move on to an area that has also been super hot in ETFs. And I feel like I've kind of heard this one before, but then when I poked in a little bit deeper, then I thought, no, I haven't seen this one before. And that's the new tech and media ETF. Its ticker is FNG. And when you first hear the name, I'm like, meh, media, tech, isn't this the same thing as the social media ETF, which you and I have discussed before? That ticker is SOCL. I kind of went and I looked at the top holdings of both of these, and then I decided no.
Yeah, there's a couple similarities, but yeah,
yes.
beyond the Facebook and I think Twitter is in both, if I'm not mistaken. There's a huge number of differences between those two. I mean, FNG, it's kind of attempting to play off the whole FANG thing.
It sounds like it's a content. More like a content ETF.
Exactly. It's trying to, I don't know how successful the people are going to associate FNG with FANG, but that's basically what they're trying to do, is get your Facebooks, your Amazons, Googles, Netflixes of the world. Alibaba is another big holding. And yeah, I think how you described it as a content focused ETF is a really good way of putting it. It is an actively managed fund. I think that while it does increase the cost a bit, I do think it helps in this case, just because this is such a fast moving area, and it might make some sense to have someone on the back end saying, okay, you know, this one doesn't really fit with the theme too much. Maybe we have to, you know, take this component out and put a different one in. Some other top holdings in there. NVIDIA is a pretty sizable chunk. We have Square. So that might be the only non-content one, if you will.
Yeah.
But, you know, Microsoft, and then a couple other more component type companies like a Red Hat, companies like that. But yeah, a pretty diverse tech-ish fund. You might want to call it the next generation of a social media fund, if you will, of like, okay, this is where the internet's going now, is more focused on this content stuff. And we've sort of progressed beyond just, you know, talking to each other online.
Yeah. Okay. That's an interesting one. Let's move on a little bit. There's another one that I like because this one involves small cap companies, which you don't see very often. And that's the small cap cash cow ETF with that great ticker of CALF. CALF is the ticker there. And it sounds kind of confusing. I'm hearing small cap, cash cow. Does this thing pay big dividends? Like what gets you into this?
So their idea is companies that have a lot of free cash flow have a lot more options at their disposal. And to me, that makes a lot of sense right off the bat, because, hey, you got all this extra money. You can either reinvest in stuff, pay dividends, do M&A activity, you know, whatever. And
right.
If you don't really have a lot of cash that's, you know, free, what are you going to do? You're kind of, yeah, you know, between a rock and a hard place. So to me, it's sort of a focus on companies that have a lot of flexibility. And I do believe it has a bit of a value tilt. If we look at some of the numbers, and the S&P Small Cap 600 Index has a P of about 25 right now, and the actual CAF Index ends up having a P of about 18.5. So it's a little bit more value tilted on that way. It's not so much a high dividend payer as it is a dividend growth story. If we look at the Small Cap Index, once again, three-year dividend growth is about 8.7%. And for the Cash Cow Small Cap Index, it's about 12.4%. So you're not really getting the highest yielders per se, but it's going to be tilted towards companies that are paying dividends and have the prospect of growing dividends more than anything. So you can almost sort of call it a value tilt, like a dividend aristocrat fund, if you will. So I think it could make some sense for the value investors out there, but yeah, you really have to like the free cash flow concept. And they do have a couple other ones. CowZ is one that they've had for a little bit, and that's focused on the large cap space. They have a global one too, so they're trying to do this in a number of different areas. I recently did a podcast with one of their portfolio managers over there, so you know, definitely if you're on here, you want to learn more about that, go check that one out.
Yeah, I feel like the small cap funds are intriguing for investors to use ETFs too, because it gives you access to a lot of companies you either never heard of or wouldn't think to buy, or it's a little riskier to buy, you know, 10 or 20 of them all at once. Most people aren't going to go out and buy 20 small cap companies with good free cash flow. They're just not. And this one holds, what, 100 companies. Yeah. So that's a good variety. But I looked up the top 10, and it is some names you might have heard of.
I thought your favorite company was on there, right?
RH. Yeah, Restoration Hardware. I own that in my own personal portfolio. But yeah, if I wanted to own a whole bunch of these other ones, this is the type of ETF I would want to buy, because it has Ascena Retail in there, which owns Ann Taylor. So a couple retailers, and then other companies that aren't as familiar, like TTM Technologies, Universal Corp was in that top 10, Benchmark Electronics. So it sounds like there's a good amount of like techie kind of names.
Yeah, the two top sectors are consumer discretionary and then tech after that. Those account for a big chunk, but it's not necessarily always going to be focused on that. That's right. Just more or less what it happens to be. Those are the companies that happen to have high free cash flow right at this time.
That's right.
Yeah.
But that makes sense too when you realize what they're doing with their earnings and all of that right now. So yeah, this one's kind of intriguing to me. And again, the ticker is CAF, C-A-L-F.
A really great ticker.
It is. I do. I'm not going to forget that one. Okay, let's turn back to a little bit more on the, I want to call it the techie side, but there was one that you brought up to my attention just a couple days ago that is called the Founder Run ETF.
Another great ticker.
Yeah, BOSS, Boss. And this is when the founder or co-founder is serving as CEO, right?
Yes.
That's what these companies are. So immediately off the top of my head, I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be like Facebook and, you know, some of the big names again. But I was kind of surprised by the list of the top 10, because it does include a whole bunch of biotechs. And
right,
that shouldn't be surprising to me, because those usually are, you know, founded by like one person, and then they run it through until they get a drug that, you know, works or whatever. And included on that list was Kite Pharmaceuticals, which just got bought out by Gilead.
Right.
So
I would like to say, I think part of the function of having so many biotechs at the top is just because we're doing this podcast today, and Kite has been up, you know, went up 30% on Monday, and Juno, I think, was up 15-20% today. So I'm sure that definitely helped push them near the top of the list. But yeah, and I do think Kite will probably have to, you know, exit from here once they do get purchased by Gilead. But yeah, there are some more traditional companies, I guess, if you will, too. Well, Grubhub and Square, there are some mm-hmm. other regular tech names out there, too. So
yeah,
it's not just all biotechs. But yeah, I do think there might be a little bit more of those types of companies in this particular fund.
Yeah. Now, why would I... Is there some kind of an advantage I have to buying just the founders?
So their idea, and you know, some of this information you can get on the Global X website, they're the provider of the fund. But, and I think there is some truth to the idea that founders are going to take more of a long-term view on their company. And if you just have a for lack of a better term, a professional manager come in, they're going to be more focused on, okay, these are my short-term stock goals. But if you're a Mark Zuckerberg type or, you know, someone in that vein, this is more or less your baby. And you're not really as focused on what happens this quarter. You care about, hey, what's going to happen 3 years, 5 years down the line. So to me, it might have more of a almost a value-centric approach for some of the companies in there. We do have a lot of healthcare and consumer names right now. And then something I think you'll find interesting, Global X's research found that founder CEOs had 10 times higher ownership in their companies than the average S&P 500 CEO. So their interests are a lot more aligned a lot of times. So I think that idea of the long-term focus and the alignment with in terms of incentives really makes it a very interesting case.
Yeah. And I like the idea of buying, you know, the visionaries, and some of these definitely would be in that category. And this is a way to get a basket of a whole bunch of founders who have the vision.
Yeah. I'd like to see a visionary ETF, yeah.
Why
I think
don't they
maybe.
Call
yeah.
It that?
Yeah.
Maybe they can't find enough.
Yeah, but Boss, that is true. And then Boss is a fantastic ticker. So
it is. How many companies are in this one? Do we know?
I believe it's 100, but okay. I can double check on that for
people.
There's
100 companies they can find with the founder? Well, I guess so. There's plenty of the small caps.
It might be a bit less, but don't quote me on that.
Well, but even still, some of them are, you know, I'm sure older too. There's still some, I don't mean like older names that you wouldn't think about, and more traditional industries, because there's a lot of manufacturing companies and that kind of thing too that have the original founders that nobody even, they don't get the cover of the magazines and all of that, but yeah. they're still running things.
It does look like 100. So, okay. Yeah.
Wow. All right. So that's interesting. Okay. Moving on to another one that I think is kind of timely right now too. And this is the infrastructure development ETF with the ticker PAVE. We're all laughing in here. PAVE. You're not going to forget that one either. And this is U.S. companies that provide exposure to domestic, so only U.S.-centric infrastructure development. And it could be construction firms, engineering, the equipment companies. I saw a lot of industrial transports. I looked up the top 10 here, and basically you own all of the railroads if you own this one. CSX, Norfolk Southern, Union Pacific, and Kansas City Southern were all in the top 10. And then you have some of the other bigger names like Eaton and Emerson Electric in there. But this one's kind of intriguing because it is a lot of these, I guess, infrastructure plays. I mean, that is the word you'd use, yeah. But... These are the old style type of companies that could come into play in a big way, not only if we get an infrastructure stimulus, but also obviously down in the Gulf Coast now with rebuilding down there, these companies
Absolutely.
Are going to be in play. And I just feel like they're already have pretty good numbers because there was a transportation bill passed 2 years ago. That money is being spent, and a lot of these companies are benefiting from that. And on the rails, the volumes have been picking up again. So there's all these companies are starting to see some good things.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to like about this space, mostly for the reasons you mentioned. And I think just the general state of American infrastructure is pretty poor, I think we'll agree on. So there's plenty of work that needs to be done on a number of fronts, be it, you know, not just roads or anything like that, but some of the water systems and airports, basically everything. I know the U.S. American Society of Civil Engineers, their report card always shows we have a failing grade for infrastructure. So I think there's definitely a lot to like in this space. One thing to note, railroads are some of the top holdings, but they only end up making about 14% of the actual portfolio. So it's not overly concentrated in the railroads. I think that's important to note. Yeah. It's just one of those things where railroads end up being, you know, larger companies a lot of times just because of the capital intensive nature of the business. But a lot of times, at least in this fund, none of the companies make up more than 4% of the total assets. So don't think of it too much as a railroad fund, although you do get sizable exposure. Some of the other segments to note are steel, industrial machinery, construction and engineering, and then electrical components as well. So very industrial focused. a slight amount of materials companies, but those are really the two areas to watch for this fund.
I feel like you're getting in the ground floor on this kind of fund because it's not real popular right now because the stimulus bill hasn't gone anywhere. They haven't done anything on it yet. And people have kind of been like, meh, we're over the infrastructure play right now. But you know, this is a chance to get in before they pass all that stuff and do everything.
Right. And this fund was actually launched in March of this year. So it's been around for a little bit. Hasn't seen too much interest as of yet. But yeah, I think people have kind of...
confirms my theory.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. People have sort of given up for now. But,
right.
But as we're seeing down in Texas and the Gulf, it's, you know, some sort of infrastructure play is going to have to happen regardless.
Yeah, and I also think this is a good way to get into this area because it is hard to buy in individual companies that play in this. I mean, obviously you can just go into the top 10 or into the holdings of the ETF and see what they own, but to go out and buy, you know, five or six or more of these companies is a little bit, it's time consuming to find ones that you think are really going to be involved for one.
Right.
And then I get questions even just on the railroad part on, you know, which railroad would I want to own? They're all in different parts of the country and have their own like missions and, you know, emphasis and all that stuff. And so even just that, but the same is true of the other, you know, the construction companies. There's some that only build, you know, hospitals and other ones that build the pipelines and like, I don't know which is which and blah. So it makes some sense that I would just buy an ETF that holds all of these. So I'm getting just the entire play on the infrastructure.
Yeah. And I think that's where ETFs can shine is in these areas where there's too many companies and you're not really sure which one is going to be the beneficiary. And I think we saw that with a number of the funds that we talked about today, be it the BOSS strategy or even the eDAO, just buying all the components on your own is going to be a real pain.
Yeah,
and
this I don't want to buy 30 stocks that are all big caps.
Right. No.
Right. But I do, you know, well, some people might want to own the Dow. And because of those big caps.
Hey, the regular Dow is arguably the most popular benchmark. And the Dow fund, the DIA is the symbol. You know, that's one of the most popular ETFs out there too. So,
yeah.
So there's some people out there looking for this.
They definitely are. Okay. Let's recap the tickers then of these cool new ETFs that you should go check out. So we do have the Equal Weight Dow ETF, which is EDOW. The New Tech and Media ETF is FNG. And the Small Cap Cash Cow ETF is CALF, C-A-L-F. And then we had the Founder Run Companies ETF, which is BOSS, and Infrastructure Development, which is PAVE. And there's nothing on Bitcoins yet, but as soon as there is, I'll have Eric back on immediately to talk about those because I know they're all going to want to be in it, Eric.
This
is what scares me. But, you know, you got to have some fun in investing. So when those launch, we'll have Eric back on. And in the meantime, you can check out Eric's podcast from the Dutrum Report on the CAF. Be sure to check that out. I'll link to it in the article for this podcast so you can listen in over there if you want to know more about what they're doing over there with these free cash flow type of funds. And in the meantime, you can hear all of ours on SoundCloud and on Apple Podcasts as well. And for everybody here, I'll see you again next time.